you say you sure are looking hot. The boys have got their eyes on you, so show them what you got. They're trying to get their courage up to ask you girls to dance. They gotta drink their 20 beers before they take a chance. Hey, all you youper dudes, are you buzzing from the beer? Are you on the edge? Are you youperized? Is it getting hard to steer? You've been drinking all that keg beer from those big foam cups. Now you got your courage up, it's time to youp it up. Youp it up, there's rhythm in that cup. Grab yourself a partner.
Welcome, campers, to Fat Camp number 16.
Number 16.
Yeah.
Wow, we've been doing this for a while.
Yep, we're starting to clock up some episodes here.
This is great. I love listening to myself.
Hopefully other people like it too.
Yeah.
So.
It's August.
Yes, it's August. It's hot.
This is the Dog Days of August show.
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't been riding my Plus and Fat Bike as much as I would like because it's so flipping hot.
And humid.
Gravel grinding.
Yep.
Yeah.
A little bit of road riding has been nice once in a while, but it's hot. It's humid.
Yep.
It's August.
Unless you're in the UP. Well, I shouldn't say that. Unless you're in the UP during the week that I was in the UP.
Yeah.
Because we both have been up into the UP to go ride in the last month since we were last recorded.
So I think on this show, we're definitely going to hit the UP.
Yep.
We've got, we'll talk a little bit about that. Ken discovered some things while on a trip up there, and I discovered some things about bike racks. We've got an email that we're going to read to you from one of our listeners out there. And then we've got some new stuff that we want to talk about, and I've got some questions about because I don't understand it as usual that Ken's going to explain to us. But that's probably going to be mainly the three parts of our show number 16.
Yep, nothing too monumental, but some good stuff starting to trickle out that we can talk about product-wise.
I'm sure it'll be
technical stuff.
Yeah, it'll be nice and short.
Oh, I'm sure. They always are.
Exactly. So pour yourself a glass. Keep your hands on the steering wheel while you're listening to this, and we'll be right back to talk about the UP.
Come on, move your feet. Move your feet now. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back, Fat Campers. Here we are on the beautiful west coast of the land of the hand in Michigan. And recently I took the family trip up to the UP during the week that you didn't want to go, with thunderstorms and torrential downpours and high winds that shut down the Porcupine Mountains.
I ended up taking myself up to the UP.
Following week was the better week to go.
Exactly the week you want to go. Nice cool temperatures, no rain.
But we both went to Marquette. We both went to Copper Harbor and got some really good riding in up there. And
both of which I think are bronze level IMBA trail centers.
Ride centers. They both have their good characteristics about them, and they both have things that you can complain about too. But
pretty much, I mean, it's two really, really incredible ride areas that you can spend multiple days, no problem.
Yeah.
And
3 hours apart.
Yeah, it just a lot of diversity of riding, everything from sort of traditional cross-country and easy trails to pretty hardcore stuff.
Right, and you would probably, if you closed your eyes and someone put you there, you wouldn't guess that you're in Michigan.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's totally legit riding.
Really good riding. And most of it, am I correct, is trail built. I mean, it's not old school trail. They're all mostly designed mountain bikes.
Yeah, Marquette. Well, actually, no, both trail systems, I think, have got a little bit. Trail has been around a while, but almost all of it is, the more new school, flowy, machine-built type stuff.
Right. Really good stuff. And a great place to have Plus bikes or Fat bikes.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, and saw a ton of them in both places.
Yep, exactly. But I thought it was interesting because when you went up there, you took those new tires, right?
Yep, I ended up taking the WTB Rangers. I was riding the 29 plus version of them, the 29 by
true
3-inch.
True three.
Not quite. They measured out 0.1 inches under what pretty much all the other 29 plus tires are. So on the rims that I've got, my Chupacabras and Nards and Chronicles and stuff like that, those all measured in at between 2.8 and 2.9.
Okay.
And these were about 2.7. So okay. they're about a tenth of an inch smaller. So pretty darn close.
Okay.
It really wasn't really far off. Like with the Panracer Fat Me Nimble,
yeah.
you know, that's quite a bit, you know, smaller. That was, I think, 0.2 or 0.3 inches smaller than a lot of the other 29 plus.
What was your how'd they do for you?
Let me start off with the positive. I really like them.
Okay.
They have a nice tread design.
Are they light?
They're reasonably light. Okay. They weighed in, I think one was just under 900 grams and one was just over 900 grams. They popped onto the rims, no problem, just using a regular floor pump. Didn't have to use an air compressor.
So went up tubeless, okay.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I'll get to that a little bit more here in a sec. They've got a nice tread pattern. Like, it seems to roll pretty well. It seems to have very good characteristics. You start to lean it over in a corner, it does well. Seems to have pretty good traction. So a lot of positives that way. Now, the negatives, I would say, are that it's got a pretty soft durometer rubber, which gives you a load of grip, which is nice, but it doesn't wear all that great if you're in really rocky terrain, you're riding really hard.
Durometer.
That's a measure of like how hard the rubber is. So a higher durometer rubber is much stiffer rubber,
okay.
and it tends to hold up a lot better, whereas a lower durometer rubber tends to be a lot stickier and stuff. So like if you're on any kind of like rocky smooth surface, low durometer rubber works really well for it kind of sticking to the side of the trail.
Okay.
A higher durometer rubber is going to end up typically having lower rolling resistance. It's going to be stiffer, and it's going to hold up better.
I wonder what I used in college, if I used a high durometer rubber or if I used a low durometer rubber. I can't quite remember what the ladies liked, but anyway. Okay. I like that word,
yeah,
durometer.
And so with these tires, you know, they've got some pretty good technology in them,
mm-hmm.
in that I think it's a triple compound rubber, and I didn't look at this just before.
Okay.
I researched this before I purchased them.
Okay.
But if I remember right, there's like a core rubber, which is pretty high durometer, so it keeps the knobs fairly stiff, and then you've got a middle section of the tire, like the top coating, the middle is a little bit harder durometer than the side portion of each. Of each of the side knobs. So in other words, what I'm trying to get at, and this, I'm not doing a particularly good job
Holy
of explaining.
Shit.
So you have a pretty hard underlaying rubber,
okay.
so that the knobs are stiff, so they don't fold over.
Okay.
So you know it doesn't make the tire feel any floppier than it has to.
Right.
And then what they do is then they end up coating it with a little bit lower durometer rubber, but still fairly hard in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a pretty fast rolling tire, and that's predominantly. When you're riding down the trail, that's where most of your wear is going to come. So normally the tire is going to hold up better if you've got a harder durometer sort of topping rubber in the center of the tire.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use a third durometer rubber on the side knobs, because since you're not typically riding over on those side knobs a ton, if they make it softer, it'll grip in the corners better.
Okay.
So
after all this durometerness... How did it hold up?
Up there, it kind of held up like crap. I basically wore down the center knobs more than 50% of their knob height in 3 days of riding.
Okay.
And that was riding, 4.5-5 hours a day and riding really hard. Side knobs all started to... I didn't have one rip off, which is good.
Okay.
So, that's kind of like where that core, higher durometer rubber comes in, where you don't completely rip off knobs. But they're all getting very shark-toothed, and they're all starting to rip. Basically, my rear tire was completely trashed after 3 days.
The picture that you put up on Strava that ride, it looked bad.
Yeah.
Like worn, worn down.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a semi-slick now.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to dwell on the negatives of the tire, because overall it's a really good tire. It's just if you're in a really rocky place and you're riding really aggressively, it's not going to hold up.
But the Chupacabras held up in a rocky place really well.
Yeah, they hold up way better.
Okay.
I agree. That said, there's places where it felt like the Ranger had some better characteristics, like as far as traction and cornering and stuff like that, in certain types of like dirt conditions and things like that,
okay,
than the Chupacabra did.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it's, I don't, I definitely don't want to, I don't want to rag on the Ranger, because the big positives with the Ranger are it's cheap. I mean, I think isn't it? I think it's like a $60 tire or $50 tire.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I think it's 60 or 70. It's way cheaper than a Chupacabra.
And 900 grams.
Yeah. It, almost the same exact
weight. For a 3-inch
tire. Yeah. It's almost the same exact weight as a Chupacabra.
Tubeless?
It is rated for being tubeless.
How'd that work out?
It, like I said, it snapped into place really well, and one of them went tubeless perfectly well. The issue was the other tire, you know, it never really sealed up that well. I didn't have any problems with losing pressure during a ride, but I was always losing pressure through the sidewalls. Like, you know, if I leave my bike overnight and I come back to it in the morning, I can't ride it like that. I have to put air in.
Okay.
I mean, it's lost at least 10 PSI.
Okay.
Well, I should say maybe 5-6 PSI.
But during the ride, it's okay.
Yeah, I never had to fill it up during a ride.
Come back, have dinner.
Yeah.
Wake up in the morning and probably pump it up again.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, a deal breaker? Heck no.
Okay.
I mean, I'll take a good performing tire any day that does that over a mediocre tire that's got a better tubeless
take
performance.
Take 30 seconds to pump it up.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. But that said, I mean, the bar's been raised pretty high. Like the Chupacabras, you know, I can end up putting those on a rim with no sealant in them, you know, fill them up,
yeah,
and they maybe lose a couple PSI overnight.
Right.
You know, it's really impressive tubeless performance, whereas these didn't have it. And I thought that over time that these would end up getting better.
Okay.
And they never did. I rode them for like maybe a week, 2 weeks. I think it was maybe a week, 10 days. You know, so not quite 2 weeks. Then I ended up switching over to a different rim before I ended up going up north.
Mm-hmm.
And it did it the same thing. I checked and made sure I had ample amount of sealant in there and everything like that. So they just never, the sidewalls never really sealed up. And I did the soapy water thing to make sure that it wasn't coming out around the bead or that my rim strip wasn't screwed up. It was definitely the sidewalls.
So what does it lack in the sidewalls then that the other tires don't?
I think it just doesn't have enough rubber in the sidewall.
Okay, all right.
You know, that's typically what it is, I think, what it comes down to.
Does it have anything to do with the casing?
It could. I, you know, this is where I don't know enough about the tire manufacturing. I just know in the past, like before tires were tubeless, like, you know, rated for tubeless.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'd have these super thin sidewalls and it would do exactly what I'm finding out about. And it seemed like the rubber content, they didn't really coat the inside and the outside of the casing very much.
Mm-hmm.
And they always were like a little bit porous. Like, you know, sometimes I would go for a really hard ride where I'd be like stressing the casing out a lot. The kind of ride where you look at the tire afterwards and you can start to see more threads on the sidewall.
Yeah.
And when that would happen, it would open up these little micro pores in the sidewall of the tire. And then I would have these issues with losing pressure overnight.
Okay.
And this kind of is doing the same sort of thing.
That, just to get off topic, my 29 plus Chupas are starting to weep. And you're starting to see those diagonal cross threads coming through there.
Yep.
And I'm having to add air more frequently to them.
Yeah.
And that's just a wear, right?
That's exactly it. That's okay. Just, you know, the casing starting to break down. You got a bunch of different plies,
okay,
you know, that make up that tire.
Right.
And after you've just stressed the pajibas out of them, going through a lot of corners and hard braking and, you know, hard acceleration, eventually those plies start to kind of, I don't know, like they delaminate slightly or whatever.
Yeah.
They must start to move next to each other. And I think
stretch.
Yeah, and or just like, you know, the rubber, like that was kind of really impregnated in there, kind of detaches a little bit from the threads of the casing, and then, you know, that's where you get those micro pores, and it starts to, you know, seep a little bit and stuff.
Gotcha.
So it's a wear thing.
Gotcha. I think I'm going to try those Rangers, though. As long as I don't go to the UP and ride hardcore for 4 to 5 hours a day, and just if I stay in the sandy loamy, you know, spot, they might work out all right.
That's what I was going to say. For your typical Midwest riding, I think they're going to be the bomb.
Okay.
You know, and it's like, and that soft rubber compound, it's really a double-edged sword. If you're in a really rocky area, you're riding really hard, you're going to wear out tires.
Yeah.
But if you're not in those kind of conditions, it does give you better grip in some situations.
But certain companies are making tires specifically to last in those types of conditions, though. Don't you think?
there are some out there, but there isn't a wide enough breadth of plus tires at this point to really say, okay, these are really designed to do this and these aren't.
Okay.
You know, like, for instance, I saw really similar wear when I was riding the Surly Dirt Wizards. That's another fairly soft compound tire that you start riding really aggressively. And, you know, you've got hard stuff. In this case, it was like roots and some rocks.
Yeah.
You know, you start to end up seeing the knobs really show some distress.
But don't those tires want to be ridden aggressively?
Yes. Yeah. No, and that's the thing. You know, that soft compound gives you a performance edge because right. it grips onto rocks better.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of times that's a really positive thing. And that's where I kind of, you know, why I was geeking out about this triple compound thing. Because if you just have a soft rubber tire,
yeah.
you're going to rip knobs off. Those knobs are going to feel all squirmy.
Okay.
You know, this didn't exhibit any of those negative characteristics. It just didn't wear that great.
Okay.
So, you know, this is a well-designed, softer compound tire. You know, as far as all the ride characteristics and getting what you want out of a soft compound, it's just, you got to go into it knowing it's not going to hold up that great.
What's that word again?
Durometer.
Durometer. Gotcha. Yep. Hysteresis. Durometer. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I discovered that if you want to buy a bike rack, buy a damn good one.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have both gotten one-up racks recently.
I finally did it.
Yeah.
And I've been through, I mean, I've tried other brand names, and they're okay. But, I mean, when your bike falls off the back of your car onto its handlebar and you're...
Yeah, and you grind down a carbon down handlebar.
3 inches of your handlebar just barely in front of your brake lever.
Yeah, you lucked out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So, the one-up.
Yeah, so yeah, both of you and I got one-ups. I absolutely love mine. I, you know, this is just something that I viewed it as an investment. I've run into more than enough people that have had one-up racks for like 10 years and just rave about them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is like kind of, I don't want to call it a lifetime purchase, but I mean, this is going to be a couple decade purchase. And it's pricey, but damn, is it worth it? It's like buying Paul component stuff or any of the other like high end, really well manufactured stuff.
Yeah.
It's a joy to use. It brings a smile to my face every time I put my bike on and take it off.
Right. Right.
You know, and I can't rave about it enough. So.
Yeah. Take your fat bikes up to the UP. Take your plus bike up to the UP. Now, oh, back to the Ranger. They're making a shit ton of different sizes, right?
I'll be honest, I'm not as up on my 27 plus. But
didn't we talk about last time how many different sizes they
have? I think they're making a couple of different sizes, and I think they're making a couple of different like casing
okay.
types. So basically, and I guess you know that's another thing that's important to note about the Ranger. I'm using the 29 plus one, if I remember correctly, is their lightweight casing.
Okay.
They describe it as being pretty durable, and that echoes what my experience was. There were several times I definitely whacked rocks. I could hear it. I could feel it.
Okay.
You know, where I'm rubbing the sidewall against a rock. And that generally doesn't end well if it's a really weak casing, and I didn't have any issues.
Oh, okay.
I don't have any major scuffs. I don't have any major cuts. I don't have any issues whatsoever at all.
Cool.
So that bodes really well for the tire.
Okay.
That said, I think they make some burlier versions in the 27 plus world.
All right.
So I think that if I remember right, they made two different sizes and they have two different casings in the 27 plus world.
Gotcha.
Which is good. I mean, that's appropriate.
Right.
I don't know if they did anything different with compounds because it's like, frankly, if I were going to go with a more burly sidewall, I'd probably want to end up having a higher, you know, a stiffer rubber compound, a higher durometer rubber just so it held up better. Because, I mean, what's the point in having your tread wear out, you know, well before the casing wears out?
Right, right.
You know, if you're riding in those conditions, you need a stronger, you know, sidewall. Okay, you probably need a little bit higher durometer rubber.
Sometimes during the podcast, if I was an outside listener, I wouldn't know if it's about bikes or about porn. The other night when we were sitting down at the bar, and we were having some weird discussions about bikes and stuff, and we had to be quiet because... If you were sitting on the other side of us at the bar, you might think we were talking about some really weird things.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember we were kept talking about rubbers and things like that, and there's some other terms we were using that were a little bit questionable if you were just eavesdropping.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah. Yep.
No, it was a good time to get up there. It's always a good trip.
It's amazing. I would recommend anybody, if you get a chance, to go up there, because like Copper Harbor, they've got 35 miles of trail. That's just amazing. It's all good.
It's not, and it's, you can avoid the death trails.
Well, I mean, it's very well signed. You've got everything from, kind of green family type stuff all the way up to double black diamond.
Right, right.
You know, you got jump lines and all sorts of stuff like that. And it's premier quality across the board.
Same with Marquette.
Yeah. And, the beautiful part about it is even some of the more challenging downhills, like there's the Flow Trail, and I'm blanking on the name of the other one. That's
Daisy
up in,
Dukes.
Well, Daisy Dukes is down at the bottom.
Well,
but
there's Flying Squirrel, Dynamo, Downtown, well, all those stuff.
Yeah. Okay, the Flow Trail goes down, and then it's kind of splits off, and you can keep staying on the floor, or you can do Daisy Dukes.
Right,
Daisy Dukes is a really classic example of just really well-designed trail, because it's all these different tabletop jumps. Or you can roll over them, or you can pump them. Okay. So depending on what you're trying to do, I mean, if you can be anything from a cross country weenie up to somebody who's just wanting to huck their meat off something and
huck their meat off.
Maybe that was another term we were using in there. You basically, it fits all styles and it's super fun. Yeah, there's just like there's no problems that way.
I'd love to have my meat hucked off on Daisy Dukes. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the combination. We were Daisy Dukes and rubbers. Wow. And
well, hey,
yeah, so moving on.
That let's take a chill here. I think I might need to refill or not, or
have a smoke.
Right, exactly. And then we're gonna come back. We got an email that we want to read to you and share with you, so have a little break here. Welcome back, Fat Campers. We're going to we're kind of getting some emails now and then. And
Some really good ones. Some good questions.
Exactly. So the email, if you want to get a hold of us, is fatcamppodcasters.
Plural.
@gmail.com. So shoot us an email if you want. If you want to complain, that'd be great too. But it's kind of neat to get email from people that are listening to us.
Well, and it's nice because, people have got some good questions that aren't necessarily straightforward. Do I want to spend my money on this? Do I want to spend my money on this? Which is going to give me bigger bang for my buck?
Exactly, exactly. FatCampPodcasters@gmail.com. That's plural. So here's one from James H. And he writes to the Fat Camp Podcast. I bought myself a Surly Wednesday last January so I could ride the trails. He lives in the Minneapolis area, he includes. He wants to ride them in the winter. I chose the Wednesday partly for the price and because it seemed like the jackknife of fat bikes. Sounds good.
Yep, well put.
I envisioned this to be my one bike for trail riding year-round. When the ground thawed and I hit the dirt, it became apparent that some changes were needed. I first ditched the Nates for Husker Dews and converted to tubeless. Smart guy.
Yep, good.
Next, I changed the stem from 90 to 50 and lightened the bars. Most recently, the addition of a dropper post has made my riding more fun and feels safer. I got to get a dropper post.
Yeah, you do, man. This trip to the UP just reaffirmed. And it's like every time a lot of times I'll take it off because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to really need it for a little while. And then I put it back on. I'm like, my bike is so much more fun.
Yeah. No, local trails, I even need them. I know.
Yeah, there's just, it's anybody, everybody needs a dropper
post. Nice job, James. You just one-upped me. I now pause because he's low on funds and consider my options. It's easy to lose control of the steering when speeding down rocky, rutty sections, so a suspension fork feels like the obvious choice. My concern here is the lack of options and the additional weight on a bike that's already heavy. No doubt. A set of 27.5 plus wheels would shed lots of weight, but it seems really expensive to build a set of wheels on fat bike hubs, around $1,000. Between the fork and the wheels, it seems like I could get a decent 27.5 hardtail for the same price. I would love to get some feedback on my options. Are my assumptions correct? Are my ideas for solutions way off base? Thanks, Jim. P.S. Always enjoy the podcast. Thanks, Jim.
Yes, thank you.
All right. So, what do you say?
Well, I mean, it is a tough choice. There's definite benefits to a fork. There's definite benefits to a wheel set.
Or
a whole other 27 plus.
Another bike, yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me start with forks first. Yeah, I'll be the first to say it's unfortunate there's not more fork options.
Yeah, it sucks.
I really, 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 really wish there were some more options than just the Bluto. Because, I mean, personally, and I know I'm getting in my own stuff instead of, you know, his stuff, but, you know, I'm going to be building up a full suspension bike.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, really, I don't want to go with a Bluto because I'm a big dude and I'm an aggressive rider and that's too flimsy a fork for me.
Yeah.
I want to go with something with, you know, 34 or 36, you know, millimeter stanchion tubes.
Stanchions.
Damn it. I'm still saying it wrong.
I know.
Yeah. So, you know, just,
I need a beefier fork.
I need a stiffer platform. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, the Bluto is a good fork, but it's not, I mean, it's kind of like the equivalent of a Reba or any other kind of cross country fork.
Right.
It's not like a full on, like really burly fork.
That's what I had to do.
Yeah.
That was my only option.
Yep. So, you know, you're kind of limited on that one.
Right.
Now, another option, and this is one of the things that I do with my, you know, personal fat bike, is that I've got, a totally different front wheel for my suspension setup. And then, you know, in this case, you know, I got that before there were any kind of good boost options. There's a bunch of good boost options now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got an MRP, I think it's a Stoke.
Right.
With, you know, and I built up a dedicated 100 mil spaced front, you know, plus wheel for that. And it works great. And I can double up because that wheel also works on my my single speed that I ride kind of sort of plus. So, you know, for me, I was able to justify having that. You may or may not be able to end up justifying that in your situation.
Well, and his concern is price.
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to build up a wheel and you're going to buy a fork.
That's some bucks.
It's going to be at least $1,000.
Yeah. Yep.
If you're going to do it the right way.
Yeah, exactly.
Or do you spend a little bit more money or the similar money and just buy a new bike?
So, I guess let me first start off with fork versus wheels, and then I'm going to talk about, you know, the fork wheel combo versus a whole nother dedicated plus bike.
All right.
So, you know, if you have to choose between a fork and wheels, it's kind of two very separate categories of riders that you're looking at. You know, the fork is going to provide more comfort. It's going to provide more control in the downhills. It's going to be very beneficial that way. A wheel set, if you get a good wheel set built up that's, you know, fairly lightweight, and you don't have to really worry about the hub so much, but if you can get some pretty lightweight rims, you can get some lightweight spokes, you know, you can go tubeless super easily. So you're not putting a bunch of, you know, like Gorilla tape or, you know, something that's really heavy. You can save a ton of weight there, and that wheel set's going to accelerate very well. And, you know, it's kind of the classic adage of, you know, if you save 1 pound on your wheels, it's worth 3 to 4 pounds on your frame or, you know, anything bolted to your frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're really going to feel that weight difference. So you can get a lot of performance and you get a lot of really good positive ride feel out of going with a wheel set. So you get a lot of bang for your buck in that respect. And in that kind of along those lines, when you talk to most people that have, you know, so let's say upgraded from, you know, an aluminum frame to a carbon frame versus aluminum rims to carbon rims, the carbon rims make a bigger difference than going to a carbon frame.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a ton of bang for your buck by going with a good wheel set. If going fast is kind of your thing, or you want something that feels more sprightly, or it's going to climb better, or what have you.
Yeah.
But it's not going to do anything to make your bike, you know, handle in the rough better. You know, it's not going to do anything better from a comfort standpoint.
Okay.
It's just going to make you go faster. So if going faster, you know, in that kind of sense is something that you want, and I guess I'm kind of thinking faster in the cross country sense, you know, then the new wheel set's going to be better than a fork. But if you are more inclined towards more rowdy riding, you want some more comfort, you want some more control, you know, that's where going with a new fork will end up, you know, going with a suspension fork or a rigid fork will end up offering you some benefits.
Okay.
So there's that kind of thing. If you could only do one or the other, you know, fork or new wheels,
right?
That's kind of how that breaks down, you know, depending on what your ride style is and what your preferences okay. are. Now, if you end up getting a good wheel set and a good fork, you're probably talking $1,500.
Right.
You know, you could probably do it a little cheaper, but
yeah, I mean, you could, but
you know, it's you're talking $1,200 to $1,500.
Exactly.
You can get a decent plus bike for that amount at this point.
Which is the better thing to do?
So once again, this kind of it breaks down how you use your bike.
Jeez.
Yeah. If you know, yeah, there's nothing black and white.
I know.
So if you're the type of person that like wants to do beach riding and stuff like that during the summer, like you want a full fat setup during the summer, and you know, it really needs it. And so you're going to, you know, like within any given week, you might ride, you know, you might want to ride your fat bike setup or you might want to ride your plus setup. It's probably better to get two bikes.
Okay.
But if you're the type of rider who's like, okay, I want fat in the winter, and I want plus during, you know, the warmer months.
Yeah.
And you're not going to end up switching back and forth a bunch. You're going to get a lot more performance out of putting a fork and a new wheel set on your fat bike.
Yeah.
Than you would having two separate bikes.
Hmm. Okay.
Because, you know, if you look at a $1,200 to $1,500 plus bike, I mean, it's going to be a solid bike. You know, it's going to be good, but it's not going to, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's not going to be that inspirational. You know, you're not going to get really high quality suspension. You're not going to get, you're going to get a hefty wheel set. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, the bike is not going to really, I mean, it's just, it's not going to be sprightly. It's not going to be anything top end.
Right.
Whereas if you spend, you know, $1,200 to $1,500 on your fat bike, getting a fork and getting a new wheel set.
Yeah.
That sucker, it's gonna feel really good.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, and like I think about a Wednesday, you know, that is a really nice riding steel frame. It might not be light, but in this case, you know, the frame weight, you put a pound on there, so what? I right. crap a pound, like, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not a big deal, but you take a pound off the wheel set and that makes a huge difference.
Right.
You know, that bike's going to accelerate. It's going to brake better. The suspension's going to work better. Everything about it's going to end up being better. So, you know, putting money into higher quality stuff in that situation makes more sense. But like I said, you know, it can be a pain in the butt because if you want to end up one day doing a fat bike ride and the next day you want to do a plus ride.
Oh yeah.
That's going to be a royal pain and you don't want to do it. That's where you want two bikes.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So it depends on where you're at, you know, and what kind of riding you want to do.
What kind of mechanical skills do you have?
Yeah. Yeah. And what kind of time? I mean, it's like maybe, you know, you like to go out to your garage and you like to switch your bike over. And I have to admit, I kind of fall in that camp. There's something soothing about going out and working on it.
It took me like 10 years till I could finally like, hey, switching the fork out, not a big deal. 10 years ago, I'd been like, I got to go to the bike shop.
That's exactly. So you got to have the skills. You got to have the tools.
Right.
You got to have the time.
Right.
And if you got that and you want to switch back and forth, you know, once again, it's probably better to go with the fork and the wheels and just go chichi. But, you know, if that's not you, then you want two separate bikes.
Hey, did Jim ever get back to you on what he did?
Nope. Never heard what he ended up doing.
Oh, Jim, you should email us back. Tell us what you finally did. I'd be curious to see what your plan is once you get the funds back together.
You know, that was really good to hear from him. And you know, I think it's a position a lot of people are in, which is why I thought it was important to end up talking about it on the
totally,
show.
Totally, yeah. I've got a fat bike, and now I know that I can switch it over. But
yep,
can I switch it over better, or should I? Buying a new bike's pretty fun though too, you know.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's no right answer. There's a lot of pros and cons to both.
Yeah. Oh, I think you laid it out though pretty clearly though.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, if you just like riding your fat tires and you like the big fat contact patch,
yeah.
You want a little more comfort. You want a little more control on the downhills. Get a fork for that sucker if you don't already have one. It's a great addition.
Yeah. Throw in a Bluto.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Bluto is a good fork. There's no doubt about it. I might rag on it for being a little noodly under hard, aggressive riding, but
saved my ass in the UP.
Yeah, and it saved your ass down in North Carolina and, you know, Pisgah.
Yeah,
so.
And as soon as I got back, it took me 20 minutes. I could switch it right out, and I'm back to rigid.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a really good option.
Gotcha.
You know, if your budget or, you know, you don't really care about going that fast, you know.
Cool. Hey, shoot us an email, fatcamppodcasters, plural, @gmail.com, and, We'll do a little bit more of this listener email in the future.
Sounds good.
We're going to be back after a little break here. I think we're getting thirsty. And we've got some new shit to talk about.
Stuff we are excited about.
Yeah, and I don't think it's ugly. So we'll be right back.
Get your act together. Don't worry how you look. Because it don't really matter when we start to cook. You waited for the last set. Pretty soon we'll have to go. Come on, all you rutabagas. Come on, rock and roll. Put your arms around your girlfriend and one hand on a beer. Jump around the dance floor like a wounded deer. Flap your wings like a partridge. Wiggle your tail like a smelt. Dance like you got snowshoes on. It's the best you've ever felt.
Welcome back, campers. We've got some interesting products that have been released that kind of have us fired up.
Section 3 of the podcast 16 starts out with some interesting products.
Ah, yes, the Karate Monkey.
Yeah. Oh, classic Surly, man.
Yeah. I'll be honest. You know, I liked Surly's for a long time. You know, it's like I always thought it was a good philosophy. But the Karate Monkey, that was like what crystallized the Surly philosophy in my head. And right. I was like, that's badass.
Is the Karate Monkey just like the Pugsley was, just like the Krampus, you think?
You can't say that because, I mean, the Pugsley and the Krampus, they were first movers. Though the Pugsley was the first production fat bike.
Right.
The Krampus was the first production plus bike.
Right.
You know, so, those kind of had a special spot. And the Karate Monkey didn't do that. But what it did was, it was one of the first affordable 29ers that you could buy.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you had to get a custom 29er or something like that. It was like, you know, it made it so it was available to your everyday man. You know, okay. He could ride a 29er and he could take advantage of it. And it was like a nice riding steel frame.
Yeah.
You know, and they're always heavy, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, you can have your knocks on, you know, Surly frames, but you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. They have a lot of really good features.
Right.
And you know, they've been first movers on a lot of stuff. Right. So they make it so that you can get into cool stuff very easily.
If your complaint is that it's heavy, they don't want to sell you a bike anyway. And no. They're selling a crap ton of bikes.
Well,
and there's enough people that like them.
Yeah, I mean, great ride quality. It's going to be reliable.
As hell,
versatile. There's so many pluses for that. So it's just, you know, it's not a race bike.
So what they do to it to change it?
Okay, so they
why fuck with it?
They did their not boost spacing, which I have to admit is brilliant.
I really like how they spelled not boost.
Yes, yes.
G-N-O-T.
Yep,
is so Surly.
Oh, it is. Yeah. But this is like the, you know, the surliness, like summed up in a feature on a bike.
Yeah.
Because what the not boost spacing does is,
hey, there's boost coming out. We're like, all right, man, we're gonna be not boost.
No. So
what'd they do?
So it's not boost. It's not your normal like 142 spacing. It'll take a through axle. You can also run it single speed. Blah 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 blah. But the spacing piece.
Yeah.
What they did is they kind of split the difference between like the 148 boost standard and the 142 through axle
traditional
mountain bike standard. And I think it's 145. I might be wrong.
I think 145 now.
Okay. Yep. So it's basically
splits the boost and splits the old school.
It's 3 millimeters away from either one. And when you've got a steel frame, the tubes, you know, they're going to handle flexing like that. No problem.
Okay.
You know, it's not going to hurt the frame. It's going to be easy to do, you know, so why not take advantage of this kick-ass material and do something that no carbon bike can do?
And you can stretch that steel frame out 3 more millimeters.
Oh yeah,
easily.
Super easily. Yeah,
and
so
you can
smash it in or
you
whatever
can
you want.
Compress it that much too.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it sums up Surly better than anything else because it doesn't make a difference what kind of wheels you got laying around. You get a Karate Monkey frame and you could, you know, throw them on there and you'd be good.
I'm not a very smart person, but I think that's genius.
I agree. I'm 100% behind you on the genius thing.
I didn't see that coming at
all. No, I think it's a really good idea. And nobody else in the industry is really going to do
that.
You
can only do it with steel frame, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you probably in theory
could. Aluminum?
You probably could, but it still kind of like skeeves me out.
You don't want an aluminum to break.
No. I've got a few scars from broken aluminum stuff.
Gotcha.
So I don't need another one.
So how soon do you think this is going to be available? Right now?
I have no idea. Okay. I unfortunately haven't read up on that.
Gotcha.
I'm hoping Surly, you know, makes it available pretty soon, because I think it's a badass bike. And there's such a proliferation of plus bikes right now. I mean, basically, anybody who's building a 29er, when they end up updating their model, in general, is going with the boost spacing, and because of that, they can end up going sort of the same exact thing as the Karate Monkey, 29er/27.5+.
Did they have to now? So when you widen it out to 148, does that widen the chain stays up by the bottom bracket enough to fit a plus tire up?
Yeah. So I guess that's, you know, you and I have dorked out about, you know, spacing on the rear wheel.
Yeah, good thing we're not at the bar again. Hey, but, how's your spacing on your rear wheel?
But, you know, the reason why this is significant is because you can end up running either a 29er wheel, which is what a Karate Monkey has been able to run forever,
sure,
or you can run the 27, you know, 0.5 plus. So, it, you know, it basically, it plusifies the Karate Monkey.
Okay.
And that's where it just, you know, it just adds versatility to an already versatile bike, which is awesome.
Now, what about the old Karate Monkey?
What about?
What was the spacing on that, you think?
That was your, I think it was 135 at that point.
Yeah.
They had the old school sliding dropout.
You can't spread that out enough to fit a plus.
Well, yes, you could spread it out enough. You could probably end up fitting a boost-spaced rear wheel in there.
Yeah.
But you're not going to have the spacing up front.
Okay.
To be able to run, you know.
So the spacing up front changed.
Yeah, maybe you would run a 27.5x2.8 or
gotcha,
something, you know, if you're lucky. I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing. If you ran it way back in the dropouts, you might have enough room to do something like that. But it's just not a good solution.
You can't go 29 plus on the new Karate Monkey. Only
27.5. No, okay. No, supposedly not. I mean, I don't think anybody's really tried to fit it on there yet.
Right.
But it's not designed for that.
Genius.
Yeah.
Well done, Surly.
Yeah, so I'm stoked to see
some,
you know, new life being breathed into the Karate Monkey.
Nice idea, Thor.
Or whoever, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that.
Now here's the other one that came out, and when I first saw it, I actually talked to, when I was up at Copper Harbor, I ran into Pete. He's an engineer at Salsa, and the discussion came out about, hey, you know, where's some new stuff coming out from you guys? And he said, Saddle Drive's coming up next week.
Yep.
Just wait. And sure as shit, I got home, and I look up Pete, and then I look up what Salsa's doing, and they come out with a plus bike that I don't think is what everybody else thinks about it.
Well, you're just talking about the aesthetics.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are saying it's
ugly. Just fucking ugly.
Yeah.
Like, it's stupid looking.
But, I'm sorry, but
I didn't think that at first at all.
Well, okay. Based on the frame tube layout, you put that aside and you look at, like, the paint job they did on and stuff like that, I think it's a really attractive bike.
Yeah.
I really like pretty much every single one of the, the color scenarios.
Way bigger triangle for a frame bag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you can fit bottles in there and everything else like that.
Totally.
I mean, yeah, so, you know, I think it's a great layout. But the thing is, I mean, this is the same thing that people were saying back in, the early 90s or whatever, when elevated chainstay bikes were around.
Yeah.
I mean, elevated chainstay bikes are fugly. I mean, there's no getting around it. They're kind of this funky looking thing, especially with the asymmetric stays. You know, it's like, it looks like you got an extra tube in there you don't really want or need. But...
Right.
You know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. And what it allows is so freaking rad that I think it totally, the function outweighs, you know, any aesthetic qualm that somebody should have.
So what's really good this?
And
the name of it, the Wood Smoke, the Salsa Wood Smoke.
Yep.
29 plus, 27.5 plus.
Yeah.
Three wheel sizes.
Yeah. And, you know, they say that the rocker dropouts, I don't remember what the exact name is they use on them.
2 inches?
The rocker dropouts allow some of the geometry modification, and
they also
talk about, like, if you really want to keep the geometry exactly the same, then you can end up running different travel forks.
Okay.
So, you know, I think they do like a 120 and 130 or something similar to that.
I'm not liking having to buy a new fork to change my geometry, but
I don't disagree.
I wonder if they can do an angle set.
That's a good question. I haven't looked at what the specs
stump,
are. Ooh,
stump
man.
The Fat Camp podcast.
Yeah, no. But no. Okay, so this is something that I really do think is a factor that not a lot of people were like, you know, for whatever reason, people don't talk about angle sets when they're talking about this you know, bikes that'll switch between these two
right,
things.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different approaches. There's some people that'll have like a flip chip if it's a rear suspension
sure.
bike and
yep.
it changes sort of the ride height. There's some people that say you have to run a 130 fork and then a 120 fork or whatever, you know, like a 10,
sure.
10 millimeter different fork. There's other people like, I think, what is it? Is it Pivot? I might be wrong on that.
I don't know.
There's another company that ends up using, like, it's essentially, it's a spacer below, or I guess it'd be above the lower cup
oh.
on the headset. So it essentially, like, you know, kind of takes up that same 10 millimeter difference.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a lot of different approaches to this.
I remember
seeing nobody that. Talks about angle sets, and angle sets are badass.
Yeah.
I mean, angle sets make a humongous difference in how
and when you
rides.
Talk to angle sets about people, they're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, oh, yeah, okay.
And they're not hard to adjust.
No. You got, well, you just got to know somebody who's got the shit to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some tools. You're right. Yeah. You're right. You
but, know, I mean, your bike shop would gladly do that for a case of beer.
No doubt. And you're talking a dramatic difference in how that bike's going to handle.
Huge difference.
Yeah. And as things get slacker, you know, this progressive, this new school, this modern geometry, whatever the hell, you know, they describe it as, you know, that's really good in certain stuff, but it's not good in other stuff. You know, I mean,
yeah.
tight, wooded, single track,
yeah.
it's not a good setup. You know, when
I
you
don't longer slacker.
No. You know, it's like for our kind of riding, it's not good. But then again, I go up to Copper Harbor.
Oh,
I go to Pisgah.
You know,
any trail system that has got bermed corners, you don't have to have a really sort of tight, fast handling bike. But if you're
easy rider.
Yeah, exactly. It works just fine because, you know, you just kind of ramp that, you know, front tire up onto the
yep.
berm and then just lean it over and whoop, you rip around the corner.
Right.
It works really well. But if you're in more old school single track or whatever you want to call it,
sure.
You know, very sort of thick, tight single track, then that's where a steeper, you know, handling bike works a lot better. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, you know, and where you are geographically. But an angle set, I guess, is what my point is, will make those changes.
Thank you.
Know,
you.
It'll really add a lot of versatility. And there's some bikes that have proprietary head tube things where they're like these funky sizes and there's no way you could do a headset
okay.
or an angle set, excuse
yeah.
me. So, you know, there's some.
We need to find out.
Yeah, we need to find out on that. But I really, you know, that's something that more people should look at, and that's something that more manufacturers should make sure that they can accommodate, because there's a wide variety of angle sets available. And there's some bikes that are just doing funky stuff. Like,
yep.
you know, yeah. I just know, like Santa Cruz, all of their head tubes don't take an angle set, as far as I can tell.
Oh,
I couldn't find one out of, you know, Cane Creek doesn't make them. And if I remember
oh.
right, Works out
yeah.
of the UK, they don't make them either. And those are kind of the two big angle set companies. And I think FSA has got an angle set too, and they didn't make it.
So Fat Campers, change your angle, put an angle set
yeah,
in there.
Sorry, we digressed
no,
into
you can do
angle
it.
Set.
Back dome. To the Woods Smoke. I love the name.
Yeah, so, okay.
I love how it looks.
Carbon, this was the first carbon mass-produced 29-plus bike.
Yeah.
You know, Trek has since now launched the Stash as a carbon,
yep.
which
we'll
talk about. Yeah.
yeah.
But, you know, so it looks like a badass design. It looks like it's going to be sporty. It's going to be super fun. It's just, it's a really, you know, just all-around good setup.
Yep.
The chainstays are almost as short as the Stash.
Yeah. No, they're shorter.
Yes and no. If you look at the range of the stranglehold dropout
yeah.
on the Stash, they actually will theoretically go shorter than the Wood Smoke. But I think that
yeah.
I, based on the numbers I saw, because I was kind of like, how is that possible? Because the Stash is like crazy short. You know, how could they go shorter?
Yeah.
And then the other question is, do you want them shorter? I mean, you start to run into some handling issues if you get too much weight over the rear wheel
yeah.
in certain, you know, trail conditions. So, you know, it's the classic thing of, you know, there's a certain point where you kind of hit equilibrium and you get past that and
yeah.
you start to get to the point of, you know, you're beyond diminished returns. You know,
gotcha.
you're starting to end up getting some negatives associated with it.
But anyway, short chainstay.
Yes. Thank
okay.
you. Thank you for pulling
Bring
me back.
Back
in.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So
internal, you know, routing,
which I don't know if it's a good thing. I'm still
I
not
know.
A fan.
Well,
but
it
looks cool.
Once it's set up.
Yeah, it's great.
You know.
But you better, like, really hook your mechanic up with a lot of beer
right.
when you need to switch your cables out.
Dropper post.
Yeah, dropper post. That's amazing.
Standard.
Yeah, it's a super solid build.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were going to end up building something that could run a 29 plus, You know, like if I wanted something off the rack or whatever, that's what I'd go for.
Gotcha. Okay. But partnering with the Wood Smoke was the other bike for the common folk.
Yeah.
The Timberjack off.
The Timberjack.
Yeah.
I was stoked to see this because this
it's good.
I mean, this is kind of, you know, this
people come to you and they say, hey, I like the mountain bike.
Right.
I want to buy a mountain bike. And you always want to say, well, you got to spend the minimum of this.
Yep. You're
like, oh my gosh, da 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 da. But I think this is a bike that you could, I've never ridden the damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I would recommend this bike to someone who's an enthusiast.
Oh, yeah. Well, this kind of falls in the same category as the Karate Monkey.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, it's 27 plus, it's 29. You know, you can switch either one, and it's really economical.
Yeah.
Totally. So it's another really good option for Plus. You know, we talk about Plus, and it's like Plus, people can be demeaning and say it's only for beginning riders, but really it's for every rider. But, you know, those beginning riders are really going to notice the added security of a wider tire. It's like if you look at, you know, going with a 29er versus a 27.5 plus,
yeah,
for somebody who really hasn't ridden a whole lot, who might be a little bit paranoid about hurting themselves.
Right.
The Plus bike is a gimme.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like those people definitely should go with a Plus bike.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see a fairly economical, just really well built, you know, Plus option out there.
I got
a
question for you though about the getting the GX1 versus the NX1. Do you think that $400 is a $400 difference?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yep.
Is it worth spending the $400 to get the GX1?
I mean, it depends
it's
on
always who, worth spending the more money to get the better stuff.
Well, okay. So, you know, I think I haven't looked at it that much, you know, that closely. I mean, I haven't compared it component to component.
Right, right.
But my guess is that you're paying a premium for the Plus stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, this is just like what we've seen in Fat Bike World and on, you know, well, back in the day, 29er World and stuff, okay, like that, where components cost a premium when they first come out, from an availability standpoint.
Okay.
So, like, you know, you look at Fat Bike tires. You know, there's a lot of really good, cheaper options in fat bike tires now.
Yeah.
But 2 years ago, psh,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I could buy tires cheaper for my car.
Should I put tires on my car or tires on my bike?
Yeah. I mean, it's like those tires are bloody expensive. And I'm not saying they're not worth it. I'm just saying, you know, there's a premium when it's small batch type stuff.
That was my guess is comment, by the way, because your car needs four. And your bike needs two.
I've paid more for two bike tires than I have for four tires.
All right,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, if you ever get a pair of studded fat bike tires, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Along with divorce papers. So, but a lot of different colors, a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, just you know solid
builds.
Bike.
They're putting different forks on them stuff. So, but how ironic that I run into Pete and he's like, "Yeah, we got something coming out next week."
No,
and
that was
Surly,
cool.
You know, Surly, same thing. We hadn't heard something from Surly in a while, and they're like, well, we'll blow your mind with the not boost spacing.
Well, and you know, what we're starting to see is the pre-inner bike, pre-Euro bike, you know, stuff get released.
Gotcha.
You know, so traditionally, like if you looked, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, like when inner bike was like the shit.
Yeah.
I guess it might not have been 10 years ago, might have been less than that, but whatever. Not that long ago. I mean, everything got released at Interbike, and now we're starting to see a more staggered thing. You know,
it helps us, the consumer, to digest it all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much going on, but I mean, this also helps dealers and stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of an industry movement as a whole,
right?
Because, you know, if you look at some of the things that, you know, sort of the QBP world, which is Surly, which is Salsa, you know, several other brands, like, you know, 45 North, which we're going to talk about also.
Yep.
All of those guys have a very kind of dealer's, you know, they have their own little world and they invite their dealers to it. You know, this, I think it's Frostbike, you know, and everybody ends up going there and they kind of get a heads up on what they would have gotten if they'd gone to Interbike in previous years.
Okay. Oh, sure. Yeah.
So a lot of those brands don't go to Interbike anymore.
Right.
So it's just, you know, it's a slightly different timetable, but it's basically the same time of year.
Well, I mean, look at Saddle Drive drops bombs.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have held off till Interbike to do that.
Yeah, yep. You know? So,
but the other thing that didn't get waited on until Interbike was the new Stash.
Yeah, you know, so Trek kind of does the same type of deal. They have their own, like, dealer events and stuff like that. And now we're starting to get teased out with the new Stash. So
what do we got? Why is it new?
Well, so, you know, the Stash is the 29er hardtail that Trek produces. So right. really similar to the Wood Smoke we were just looking at.
29 plus.
I'm sorry. Yes. 29 plus. All right. You can run 29 on it, but okay. it's primarily 29 plus bike.
Yeah.
And they, you know, made this really beautiful, well-made hydroform aluminum bike. And now they switched to a carbon.
They never had a carbon.
They didn't have a carbon before. No.
Oh.
So, you know, I am really stoked because, you know, I like 29 plus. I'm a big dude. It makes a lot of sense for my size. Sure. I don't think it works for everybody, you know, or it's ideal thing for everybody. But for me, my ride style and everything, I think it's awesome.
Right on.
So I want it to proliferate. I want to have more fork options. I want to have more good stuff going on. And, you know, seeing Salsa and seeing Trek just continuing to invest in 29 plus is awesome.
Yeah.
So basically, you know,
it's a race bike.
It's a chichi play bike. I mean, you could definitely race it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but this is not like a cross country rocket. This is a play bike.
All right.
Why would you
take a carbon stash over an aluminum stash?
Because it's lighter, it's stiffer. I mean, it's gonna ride better. So
it is more playful.
Well, I mean. You can have just as much fun on an aluminum one as probably a carbon one. Let's be realistic. However, you know, it's like, I mean, I look at my experience up in Copper Harbor, and I'm riding a hardtail.
Yeah.
You know, suspension on the front. So basically, you know, a stash-like setup.
Sure.
You know, fairly short chain stays. All the attributes, you know, it's like that's basically what I set my bike up to do up there. And it's really fun. You know, it's like you can whip that thing around. It's kind of like a... In this case, it's the big wheel dirt jump bike or whatever. You know, you're going to get beat up a little bit more than a full suspension bike. Yeah, you got to be a little more precise. You know, you don't want to case jumps. But you can do some really cool stuff with this. And it's so light and the rear end is so tight that, you know, you can just play around more in the air. You know, you can flick the bike around more. You can do a lot of things like that. Now, you know, this is not your traditional cross-country bike or whatever. Okay. Like a steep angle, really want to go fast.
Oh, okay.
This is a bike though. Scott and I talked about this. Scott Quiring, he and I were riding up in Copper Harbor in Marquette. I met up with him. So he needed a ride partner for the ladies weekend up at Copper Harbor.
Oh, it was ladies weekend in Copper.
Yep. So his significant other ended up doing the ladies camp and
nice.
I rode with Scott and we had a lot of, you know, sort of discussions about what effect, you know, the suspension has and all of these other types of things. And, you know, and also how you ride bumps because, you know, Daisy Dukes, is a classic example because you could end up airing out all these, like they have all these little mini tabletops. And you can air them out, and you could spend a lot of time in the air doing a lot of cool stuff, whipping your rear end around and looking cool.
Yeah.
But that's not fast.
Okay.
If you just basically pump through almost all of it,
yeah,
you can haul ass. Because, you know, and part of this broke down because of the way our two bikes were set up. I was riding hardtail, 100 mil front fork, and I had a dropper post.
Yeah.
Scott had... 100 mils of travel in the rear on a full suspension bike, 120 in the front, but no dropper. He was a very good boy and gave his dropper to his significant other to ride in up there.
That's very nice.
So we would get into these sections where you could pump, and I would just drop him. The rest of the time, I mean, he's a way better rider. So he would drop me. So
it was
one of those things where it's like depending on what your goal was in there. It's like, do you want to ride it the fastest or do you want to play the most?
Right.
And it's like, this is a bike where you would just want to, you know, you'd want to be doing tail whips all over the place going down Daisy Dukes.
Gotcha.
Because it's fun and it's a light bike. So you got less mass to throw around and like have to bring back in and stuff. Yeah. So the whole bike is just going to feel more playful if it's a pound lighter. So this is just going to be a super fun bike. And it's the same thing with the Wood Smoke. I think the Wood Smoke's going to be really similar.
Did Trek do anything different with it?
I don't think so. Not that I remember reading. You know, they still have the stranglehold dropouts on there, so you can go single speed, or you can end up going, you know, traditional drivetrain, or just adjust the, you know, the chainstay length depending on what you like.
Oh, all of these are in the show notes.
Yes, thank you.
These links are going to be in the show notes. Yeah, they already are. Geez, you already know that. You're listening to the podcast. You're like, he hasn't mentioned the show notes yet.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got all of that kind of stuff going on. The Stash was an amazing bike when they built it in aluminum, and now I'm just, you know, they basically built a little bit lighter, a little bit stiffer version of it in carbon.
Difference in price between the aluminum and the carbon?
That's a good question. Let me scroll here a second and bide some time.
It's okay. They got nice colors and pretty colors and stuff.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I want to say, if I remember right, I think the other frame was somewhere around like $800-$900, maybe even up to $1,000 for just the frame. And now this carbon frame sells for just under $1,600. So it's like a $600 premium, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know, and those are not firm numbers, but I would guess that it's going to end up sort of carrying over throughout their line to be similar.
It's nice that they've added this to the line, though. I mean, there's a couple different levels of Stash, and now they've raised it up a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, if you look at what the lowest priced alloy Stash is, I mean, it's a $1,600 bike, or for that same exact amount, you can buy the carbon frame.
Right, right.
You know, no parts, just the frame.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I mean, it really makes a big difference. And you know, like if you look at the high end carbon Stash, and that's going to end up having, like, I think it's going to have the carbon wheels and everything like that, it's $4,700.
Oh,
so they've got a. Oh. I mean, that would be a ripper of a bike.
Oh, it better be. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, it's the type of thing you can dabble in cross country. You can go play around at your bike parkish type of stuff. You know, you know, it's just a really versatile, nice bike.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah.
I think there was another new thing that we had to talk about.
Yes. And this is all
it goes back to tires.
Yeah. All in our Midwestern world of, you know, Trek and QBP products.
Right.
Yeah. So 45 North ended up teasing out some images and some information about a redesign of the Husker Du and the Dillinger, you know, just classic tires.
When I hear the word that they redesigned it or it's new and improved, that means that there's something wrong with the first one.
And well, I mean, and I'm not trying to disparage them. It's just, this has more to do with the age of the product and when they were released. Neither one of those were tubeless compatible.
Okay.
So, you know, that's one of the biggest things is, you know, new casing.
So right off the bat, they're tubeless.
Yeah. They ended up going with their more modern casing for both of those. So that's a really positive thing.
Okay. Both 4-inch tires.
Correct. Yeah. They haven't really talked about the Dillinger 5 at all.
Yeah.
So in the case of the Husker Du, I was pretty stoked to see the changes because
what's going on?
Well, I think we got to talk history here because the Husker Du, when it came out, it was one of the original tires.
Right.
And, you know, if you think back to that era, you know, we had like the Larry, well, there was the Endomorph, and then we got the Larry. We thought that was rad.
Right.
And then you had the Nate, which, you know, it was, it seemed like a really slow tire, but I mean, you had great traction in snow and loose conditions.
Right.
So you kind of had these like bookends. You had the Larry and you had the Nate, and it's like, you didn't really have like that all-rounder tire,
right?
You know, and then the Husker Du came in,
okay,
and everybody, I mean myself included, was just like, hell yeah, Husker Du is like the ultimate all-rounder. It's got almost the traction of the Nate,
right?
It rolls super well. It almost rolls as well as, you know, a Larry. This tire is the bomb, and quite frankly, it aged really well.
Really,
yeah. I mean, it is.
You rode it for a while.
It's maintained that kind of middle of the roadness. It's still been one of the better.
People still ride it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got a pair. I mean, it wasn't that long ago I was riding those like at Iceman and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, so it's kind of a classic tire, but it's aged. You know, we talked about the casing and then if you look at what's happened with the 45 North line, they've got some really aggressive tires, but they don't really have that super lightweight fast tire.
Okay.
You know, the Husker Du compared to some of the other modern offerings is 100 to 200 grams more. It was originally, I think, designed more for a winter tire than it was for a summer tire.
Okay.
But, you know, let's face it, that lightweight tire category is now summer fat bike usage.
Right, right, right.
It's not winter usage. I mean, you could use it in the winter, but, you know, you're not, there's way better options.
Right.
So what they did was, it looks like they've gone with smaller knobs that are further spaced out.
Okay.
So that's going to, and this is just a guess, I don't think there's been any kind of published weights with these, but just seeing that automatically makes me think, okay, we're going to have a way lighter tire. All right. There's just less rubber there.
Okay.
So I think they're kind of, they're basically going for lower rolling resistance, lighter weight, you know, a more competitive, you know, tire for summer use, but probably could extend into the right conditions for, you know, winter use.
Tread pattern changed a little bit.
It's the same basic look. It's just knobs are smaller and further spaced out.
Okay. All right. Hmm. So that's the revision. I understand that when you say it's aged out, you know, they had to do something to it.
You know? Well, it's just, you know, it was kind of a jack of all trades, but it didn't really do anything well at this point. I mean, no matter where you were at, there was probably a better tire. Now, I'll be interested to see what the specs are. You know, if this thing goes tubeless really well and it's fairly lightweight, this could be like a really hot summer tire setup. You know, it could be competitive with a lot of others.
Soon to be released, the new revised Daryl. Larry, I mean. Geez,
yeah.
The big fat Larry.
No, sadly, I don't think the Larry's coming back, but still badass for summer, winter, beach.
And then what was the difference between the, for the Dilly 4 there?
Not as much information on that one. What it looks like is they went with more aggressive side lugs.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is a really big positive.
Really?
I always liked my Dillingers. I didn't have Dillinger 4s. I've only ridden Dillinger 5s.
Okay.
But it's kind of a crappy cornering tire.
All right.
You know, it's got mediocre drive traction. You know, it's not, compared to a Bud and Lou, it's not going to do squat.
Right.
You know, but compared to, you know, a lot of other options, it's pretty fast rolling. You know, it's like if you've got harder packed snow or you might end up having an ice situation or whatever, you know, a Dillinger is a great, great tire.
Gotcha.
It's got really good range, but I always felt like the cornering was not that hot, especially like on the front. It tended to push a lot. And I think it's because, you know, it almost has a paddle wheel like design.
Okay.
Especially in the center. So if your bike is more upright and you start to put a side load on that tire, you know, it just kind of shears through the snow or something. I don't know. Huh. But they've got a much more aggressive looking side lug. It's much more like, you know, paddle like or whatever you want to call it. So I'm hoping that they are addressing that issue. Otherwise, the center looks pretty darn similar to what it was.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't look knobbier. It doesn't look more spaced out. It looks very, unlike the Husker Du, which looks drastically different. Same general pattern of the lugs, just way smaller and way spaced out.
Yeah.
This, I don't look at this and be like, oh, that's a way different tire, until I look at the side lug, and it's a much bigger side lug.
Huh.
So I'm kind of excited about
that. So Husker Du Dilly 4 1.2 or 2.0?
I'm sorry, say again.
Is it just a modification on the first one, or is it
okay.
Is it a whole new operating system, you know?
Yeah, like the Husker Du, I would list that one as going from like a 1.0 to a, you know, 2.0 or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty significant.
Right.
Whereas with the Dillinger, this would be a smaller iteration. It'd be like a 1.2 or something, you know, or whatever.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that.
All right.
So, you know, and I think they've redesigned the side lugs on the Husker Du a little bit to be, you know, once again, it's going to handle hard cornering a little bit better. But, you know,
they put it on the Popsicle bike.
Yeah, that Salsa. I have to admit, I have a really soft spot for blue, white, and red fade paint jobs. Like the Richie.
It just reminds me of a Bomb Pop, man.
Yeah. But it also reminds me of Richie's, and I liked Richie's.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
They stole it from him.
I don't think they did that. I think that was an era, and he just happened to hang on to it longer. And I have no problem with that. But, I mean, they're going to offer it in the 60. They're also going to offer it in the 120 TPI casings. Okay. So you're still going to end up having all those options. But it looks like we're going to have some really good stuff coming that way from 45 North.
Why would you buy a 60 TPI?
I can see why you'd buy a 60 TPI tire. I'm not 100% sure why you'd buy a 60 TPI 45 North tire. Because there's some really good cheap options for tires in 60 TPI. But you're going to pay a premium for the 45 North, and unless you're really sold on that tread design, you're probably going to be able to find a better price for a tire that's going to be kind of mediocre working.
Okay, so but why would you want to buy a 60 TPI tire?
Just for money savings. I mean, it's not going to, you know, when you go up to 120 TPI, it tends to be a much more supple casing, so it's going to adhere to your ground better. It's going to end up having better ride quality. It's going to be a lot lighter. There's going to be a lot of performance aspects that are positive.
Yeah.
But it costs more. The other thing is that, you know, in some cases, and, you know, once again, I don't know what they're doing here, but in a lot of cases, like the 120 TPI tires were a weaker casing than a 60 TPI.
Okay.
So if you're riding a really rocky environment, the 60 TPI would end up being better.
Oh, okay.
But most of the time, you know, there's if you're going to put the money, like if money's not an issue, there's better ways to spend your money to get a more durable casing than going with a 60 TPI tire. There, you know, that's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, it's just there's a lot of different engineering solutions as far as like what they're doing. You know, if you look at any of the major tire brands like Maxxis or anybody like that with their EXO casing, you know, they've found ways to really strengthen the sidewalls of the tire that don't degrade the ride quality and increase the weight as much as just going with like fatter threads in the tire.
I had no idea that question was going to go this far.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. So
don't ask that question. Holy crap.
No. So, I mean, in general, if you're going to go with a 45 North tire, that's a premium tire brand. You're going to pay for it. Most people are going to go with the 120s.
Sure.
So, I think that's the biggie.
So they make a 60 just for the shits and giggles of it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I wouldn't doubt it if it gets spec'd on a few bikes and things like that.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
these
are really, like, the Dillinger, that is a classic versatile tire that still probably hits the middle road better than any other tire.
Really? Okay.
And, you know, and then you get to choose, okay, how much flotation do I want on snow? Do I need a 4-inch? You know, am I a lighter rider? Can I get away with a 4-inch? Or I don't have a whole lot of snow.
Right.
Or do I need the additional float of the 5?
Okay.
You know, and it's like, you know, they've done a really good job with that one. It's just far as like really center of the road. This is just a great all-around tire.
Good to know.
Yeah, versatile.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the dudes who have been doing Iditarod, like a majority of the field, are running Dillingers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's, you know, partially they had to do it because you can get them studded and, you know, things like that. But it's you know, like if you want one tire to do it all, that's a really good bet.
Good to know.
Yeah.
What the hell else do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
This is another short podcast.
Yep. I think we're narrowing in on an hour or maybe a little more. I don't know. But
anything in the Olympics we want to talk about?
Jeez. Nope, that's for other podcasts.
Exactly. Holy cow.
I have to say, a slow ride podcast.
Yeah.
They normally are a bit competitive with the Fat Camp podcast.
Yeah.
And they were actually, like, I don't remember how it was phrased, but it was like other cycling podcasts you might want to listen to. And Fat Camp was actually mentioned.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So normally it's like it's more trash talk. And, you know, they were positive. I'm a big fan of...
I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Slow Ride. So they do a good job. And, you know, I'm blanking on the name of their group of programs right now. They've got a lot of good podcasts.
Oh yeah.
Damn it. I would like to throw them a bone because they're good guys, but I'm blanking on the name of it. Their podcast network, because they've got some really good cyclocross content and things like that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So if you haven't, you know, Fat Campers out there, if you are interested in road riding or cyclocross or anything like that, and you haven't checked out, you know, Slow Ride podcast,
I enjoy listening to it. Yeah.
Yeah. They do a good job, and they've done way more podcasts than us. So
oh, hell yeah.
They're like our podcast swami. That
their intro is way more entertaining than ours is.
Screw you, man. You haven't even heard what music I'm going to find for this time.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's like, I mean...
Well, it's the Dog Days of August, so that's the theme of this podcast.
I don't know. We'll
come up with something.
We'll
the
see
Camper
what...
Van Beethoven was nice, though.
Good. Okay, good.
I enjoyed it.
It was a classic.
Yeah, but it's always kind of, I guess, on the archive where you have to use it from the archive, you're kind of... I don't. You're not limited. Why should I say you're limited? You're unlimited on the archives.
Exactly. There's so much good stuff.
Huh.
So yeah, it's a great place to get some music. Right. So,
anyway,
on that note,
16 is done. We'll be back in September, I think, if we come back.
I think so.
All right.
Yeah, and we're gonna have a lot to talk about because there's gonna be tons of stuff coming out of Eurobike. So
what's Eurobike?
Oh, that's basically the inner bike of Europe. So typically,
when
Oh, when? I'm sorry. Sometime in, I want to say it's in August. Okay. Yeah, because Interbike's in September. So
we should go.
Ooh, I'd love to. Yeah, I would love to. But it's, that's crazy. And my guess is we're going to see a whole lot of e-bike stuff.
E-bike stuff?
Yeah, maybe? The Euros are way into their e-bikes. More so than the U.S.
We've never talked about e-bikes on this
podcast. I don't want to talk about e-bikes.
Ooh.
It's a contentious subject.
Ooh.
And I don't really, I don't fall one way or the other right now. So
when we went over to Fat Camp over at in Zion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had
that felt.
Yeah, they had that e-bike.
I wanted to ride that.
Yeah.
I didn't, though. Sometime. Yeah. I want to ride it. I want to ride an e-bike, but I'm probably going to hurt myself. It's the same reason why I don't ride a motorcycle.
Hey, thanks for listening. Check us out at on Instagram at Fat Camp Podcasters. I think it's that. And then you can also shoot us an email at fatcamppodcasters@gmail.com. And we're going to try to, let's try to make a concerted effort this month to post more pictures on Instagram.
Is that pointed at me?
Well, you haven't posted once, you motherfucker. So take a goddamn picture and send it to me.
I'll try to think to do that.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers. You fit up. There's rhythm in that cup. Grab yourself a partner and come on, you fit up. Thanks for listening. The music we are using on today's show is The Youpers and their classic song, You Fit Up, from their album Die Hards 2. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show. You fit up, now you got that beat. Take off your trousers and come on, move your feet now. Oh, here we go. Looking good. Oh, you feel that rhythm now. Ah, come on, mama, shake it.